S-A-B-O-O, San Francisco, baby, baby!
Shiba, shiba! Shiba, shiba! Shiba, shiba!
Let me in!
Shiba, shiba!
I wanna be closer to you!
Shiba, shiba!
Open up your soul!
Shiba, shiba!
Let me find that part of you! The part that nobody ever knew!
Let me touch your...
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. One of the things I enjoy quite a bit, actually, is opera. I always need subtitles because I don't speak Italian or German, and I barely speak French. So, but I always enjoy the fact that it either ends in a bunch of weddings or a bunch of deaths. One of the operas that's going to be in the Bay Area is La Traviata. Here to talk about it is an amazing singer who's in the show. I'd like to welcome Antara Bardwaj. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I want to know your journey to become an opera singer, because you're fairly young, and that is not, you know, most kids go through the rock and roll and they want to be like rock and roll singers or a hip hop artist or, you know, I don't know, America's Got Talent. I don't know. Opera's not the first choice. So how did you get there?
So I'm going to actually make a bit of a correction. I'm not an opera singer.
Okay.
I'm a dancer.
Ah!
And I'm choreographing for the opera this year.
Nice! So tell us, okay, then tell us your journey for dance.
Yeah, so I'm an Indian classical dancer. My art form is called Kathak, which is a classical storytelling dance form that originated in northern India several thousand years ago. And Gathakas are storytellers that used to go from village to village, you know, telling stories of like the neighboring kingdoms, what's happening. And this is, you know, in an era where things weren't written down. Things were passed down through the oral tradition. And so then they started sharing stories from the great epics. And then the dance moved into the temples. And then when the Persians and the Mughal emperors came in, the dance went through its own, you know, evolution there as well. And it's had a modern resurgence again, you know, thanks to films and Bollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And now things like Instagram, you know, make this this quite old art form still quite relevant and, you know, innovating every day you see online.
So did you come up in a tradition of dancing with the family, or was it something that you came through because of the resurgence of it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think inherently I just wanted to dance it. I would hear music and I would hear the percussive tabla that is often accompanies Kathak, and I would immediately start moving my feet really fast. And that's one of the signature things of Kathak. It's known for its highly percussive footwork and its spins. And it's interesting because my mom always wanted to learn Kathak, but she wasn't able to find a Kathak teacher. And at that time, Kathak was very much associated with the courtesan culture of India, which had gotten a really bad rap at the time of British colonialism. So my parents' generation grew up thinking that no, Kathak is associated with women who are in the trade business of their bodies. So they weren't allowed to study the dance form.
So then, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you, so when you showed an interest in it, was there any kind of ambivalence on your parents' part?
No, not at all. They were so happy. If anything, the challenge was that I was living in California in the 1980s, and they were like, where do we find a Kathak teacher from, living all the way out here? And, you know, this is pre-internet era, so you couldn't just go up on Google and search for the nearest Indian classical dance teacher. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the South Asian community we see now is so large in the Bay Area, but it wasn't like that in the 80s.
Mm.
So if anything, that was more of a challenge, not the cultural norms.
Well, let me ask you this. You said that you, whenever you heard it, your feet would move fast. Like, at what age did you did your parents notice that, wow, you really like this music?
Yeah, I think by 3 or 4, they knew it.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it.
Yeah, and, you know, with classical training, you kind of want to wait a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have that focus and discipline.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time I was 7, they were actively looking for a teacher for me. And I began studying with a great Kathak maestro, Pandit Chitresh Das,
mm-hmm.
who moved out to the San Francisco Bay Area in the late 70s, and he started teaching his first children's class in the late 80s. So I began at the age of 9 studying with him and, you know, continued my journey through dance. And, you know, it's brought me to such... I never imagined that it would bring me to the stage of the opera. And that's such an incredible journey.
It is. It is. So now La Traviata, that is... I'm not sure if it's one of the Italian operas that's set in Spain, you know, like you know, because the opera is sung in so many different languages, but then they set them in these far-flung countries. So for a listening audience who's not familiar, tell us about La Traviata and how you're able to incorporate your style of dance into this show.
Yes, absolutely. So La Traviata takes place in Paris. Taking place around the time when the Eiffel Tower is being constructed.
Mm-hmm.
You see that in the backdrop of the story. And it actually ended up connecting to Kathak in a really beautiful way because the story takes place, the story is about courtesans
mm-hmm.
and about, you know, who they're promised to and how they're not allowed to love the people that they want to love because they are being bought and sold.
Mm.
And so our dancers, our Kathak dancers, are included in the salon of the courtesans, which is really fantastic because Kathak has such a strong, strong tradition in the courtesans' salons. You know, the courtesans of India were actually the only tax-paying women in the 1800s, and they were the only tax-paying women in India at the time. They were, like, highly educated. They used to study multiple languages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the feudal lords and the upper-class wealthy people would send their sons to go study and be educated with the courtesans. They commanded that much respect.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it was interesting that we're going to bring, you know, Kathak, which is the courtesan culture of India, to the courtesan salon of Paris, France.
That's incredible. So who approached you to incorporate this?
Yeah, so this is my 4th season working with Opera San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
I first began with them in a few years ago when they were staging The Marriage of Figaro, and they were collaborating with an organization called Mosaic America, and they had decided for that particular staging of Figaro, they wanted to stage it in colonial India. And so, just like you were saying, you know, how sometimes operas take place in different countries, even if they are sung in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, they decided to just transport the whole story, not take place in Spain, but for it to take place in India. So I came on as a cultural consultant through my my work with Mosaic America and ended up, you know, choreographing. And that was very much, you know, because it was an Indian story, the Indian dance mm-hmm. was a natural, obvious fit. But I think what's been really great is that Opera San Jose didn't make my collaboration with them just a one-off. Like, you know, it was like, okay, now that we have this relationship, how do we expand upon this? How do we include this versatility and really bring, you know, the multiculturalness that is in the Bay Area and have that reflected in our arts? So it was really, really exciting to get to come back again. And every time it's a huge learning curve. I keep thinking, I've got it down this time. This time I'm going to know what to do exactly.
Uh-huh.
And then I show up and I'm like, oh my gosh. So it's but it's so much fun.
So tell me a little bit about, because when you think of opera, you think of singing, and maybe they're kind of walking around a little bit, you know, like there's staging, but you are incorporating dance. So how much dance is there in the show?
Yeah, so, you know, some of these operas do have dance sequences written into them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, traditionally, any French opera always has a section called a ballet, which, as the name would suggest, is ballet.
Mm-hmm.
So last year, or 2 years ago, we did Romeo and Juliet, which was in French, and the whole ballet I choreographed, and it had, like, Kathak meets ballet kind of feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one, there's a big party that's taking place at the courtesan's house, Flora's house, a salon, and she's invited everyone for this entertaining evening. And so we are playing, traditionally it is played by gypsies. The characters are supposed to be gypsies that have come to perform for this opera. For the salon. So we decided to kind of, you know, take our imagination on that. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, the gypsies actually originated from Rajasthan, India.
Mm-hmm.
And then they traveled, you know, up through the Middle East, Central Asia, ended up in Spain finally, where actually the tradition of Kathak melded with all those along the way and combined with the native dance of Spain, and flamenco actually gets its roots from Kathak. So there's this, you know, beautiful connection of the people of through history. And so we decided to kind of play on that, okay, imagine if these women had traveled all the way from India and finally made it up to Paris, you know, what would they look like? What would they, how would they dance? You know, mm-hmm. they're not going to be doing pure traditional Kathak at this point. Like, you know, these women would be some, you know, really spearheaded women who are like, we're going to take our art form, you know, hundreds of thousands of miles away. So it was fun to get to play with that a little bit as well.
And what is the costuming like? Because it feels like it would be a hybrid, because otherwise, you know, because the period at the time, you're wearing these long, long dresses and no one would be able to see the footwork.
Yeah, so well, we're going to be wearing our traditional Indian outfits for this.
Okay.
You know, there was this really fantastic Kathak artist in the mid-1900s, who was one of the first women to ever bring Kathak to Europe. And I've been fortunate to see some of her footage, and it's very interesting to see that she's very aware that she is exotic to the West,
mm-hmm.
and she totally hams it up. You know, like, it's like almost like she's culturally appropriating herself in a way.
Like you know? Josephine Baker with the banana dress.
Yes, exactly, right? So
mm-hmm.
it's a little bit like that, where I mean, everything we're wearing is traditional, but we've been constantly emphasizing, like, let's go more. Like, where can we go more with this? Because we are trying to, like, you know, we're selling our exoticism in a way.
Is the cast jealous because, you know, I am assuming that some people don't get to do the dance?
Well, we always try to involve our chorus as much as possible. We have a lovely chorus. I've worked with these folks now for 4 years, and they are always enthusiastic and open for me to give them movement as well. So,
mm-hmm.
so we've tried to, you know, not just have a standing chorus in the background, but to give them some movement so that we're all involved in the party. And, you know, I always, when I envision a party, I just imagine a lot of movement. So there shouldn't be anyone static in any portion of the frame or the stage that you're looking at.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
Very cool. And are you like other choreographers where you're dancing in it, or will you just be sitting back and monitoring the time?
This time I am dancing in it.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm very excited about. It's such a dream to work, you know, in Opera San Jose's productions,
mm-hmm.
coming from a background of world dance, of, you know, of a dance that's not the mainstream contemporary or ballet, we always work in really small spaces. You know, it's always like I'm putting on a production and I'm the one who's, you know, doing the marketing, and I'm the one who's dancing in it, and I'm the one, you know, hiring all the, I'm doing it all. I'm wearing all like 50 hats, right?
Right, right.
Even if I have some parent volunteers and some people helping me out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's very, very much grassroots, and you're kind of doing it all one man band kind of feel. But then you get to a place like the opera where they actually have like the proper infrastructure and funding and, you know, delineated roles for every single aspect of this huge production, because that's the only way you can put on a production of that caliber.
Sure.
And it's really unheard of and unseen for people coming from my background, which is generally small stages.
Right.
So I really appreciate Opera San Jose giving a platform like this to our art form. And the one thing I'm really excited about this time that I want to share is, so opera is very, I have learned, is very, you know, conservative when it comes to adding any musicality that's not written in the traditional score.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Mozart will even write in the knock. Like, if there's a knock, it's written in.
Oh, okay.
In the score.
Okay.
And so, but I really wanted us to be able to wear our traditional ankle bells for this production, because I was like, if we're showing Kathak, we need to have the percussive element of our feet with our ankle bells. And so we will be wearing our bells, and I think this is probably the first time in the history of opera that you're going to hear traditional Indian bells with Western opera.
I love it. And so your opening night is it April 19th?
Yes, we open on Sunday, April 19th, just a little shy of a week.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a total of 5 shows. So one this upcoming weekend, and then the following 2 weekends, we have shows on Fridays at 7:30 and Sundays at 2 p.m.
That's excellent. And I remembered a question I wanted to ask. You mentioned that your mom had wanted to learn. So when you were learning, would you teach your mom some of the moves?
Yeah, that's so funny. She never wanted to learn then.
Aww.
She wanted to learn as a kid, but she didn't even once try to learn when I was learning.
Aww, that's so sad.
I never thought about that until now.
That's so sad, because, well, I'm sure she was just thrilled to watch you dance. So,
oh, absolutely.
So if people want to find out more about the show, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. You can buy, you can get tickets and information at operasj.org.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely on our socials, we're on Insta and all the other places. Opera SJ is the tag.
Okay, and you're located at 340 South 1st Street in San Jose. And if people want to know more about dances that you're doing independently of them, how would they find out about you?
Yeah, you could follow my social media. I'm at Antra Astai, so that's a bit of a hand mouthful. A-N-T-A-R-A, which is my first name.
Mm-hmm.
And then Astai, A-S-T-H-A-A-Y-I. And that is the name of my dance organization. I have a school and a dance company that is based in Mountain View.
Okay.
And we perform in, you know, all of the Bay Area.
All right. Well, Antra Badwaj, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope to see you at the show next week.
Oh, you've convinced me that I want to go. I want to hear them bells. All right. Okay, people of Earth, this is your opportunity to go check out Opera San Jose and enjoy the beauty that is La Traviata. And in just a moment or so, I am going to be having some people on to talk about, I don't know, something fun. So stay tuned.
Back in Black Mountain, a child will smack your face. Back in Black Mountain, a child will smack your face. Babies crying for liquor and all the birds sing bass. Black Mountain people are bad as they can be. Black Mountain people are bad as they can be. They use gunpowder just to sweeten their tea. Homes in Black Mountain can't keep a man in jail. Homes in Black Mountain can't keep a man in jail. If the jury finds them guilty, the judge will go they bail. Had a man in Black Mountain, sweetest man in town. Had a man in Black Mountain, the sweetest man in town. He met a city gal and he throwed me down. I'm bound for Black Mountain, me and my razor and my gun. Lord, I'm bound for Black Mountain, me and my razor and gun. I'm gonna shoot him if he stands still and cut him if he runs. Down in Black Mountain, they all shoot quick and straight. Down in Black Mountain, they all shoot quick and straight. A bullet will get you if you start to dodge in too late. Got the devil in my soul and I'm full of bad food. Got the devil in my soul and I'm full of bad blues. I'm out here for trouble, I've got the Black Mountain blues.
That's Bessie Smith and Black Mountain Blues from the Chattanooga Gal CD. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, there is an anniversary show but getting ready to happen, and it's going to be a doozy. The Back Room is celebrating their anniversary. Here to talk about the anniversary show, I'd like to welcome my guests, Sam Rudin and Lali Mejia. Welcome.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. How are the both of you?
Well, not both of me. There's just one of me here. What did you say? I'm Sam.
Sam, it's good to hear your voice. This is Lali. Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone. So we're going to start with, tell us a little bit about the Back Room.
Oh, wait. There's someone else there. Oh, I'm sorry. Who else do you have with you besides myself?
Lali.
Oh, great. I remember now that was going to happen, but I didn't realize it was going to be at the same moment.
Why, okay. Yes. So I've got the both of you. So we're going to start with Sam. And Sam, tell me a little bit about the Back Room. When did it start? And, you know.
Well, we started 10 years ago. This is the 10th anniversary this week.
Mm-hmm.
And, I found the place 12 years ago, actually, but the first 2 years I had to build in. We weren't open for the first 2 years that I had the place. I was building it and creating a different kind of space than was otherwise here. And when I got it to where it needed to be, then we opened up. We opened up on April 16th of 2016.
What kind of place is it?
What?
Mm-hmm. What kind of place is it?
Well, it is a music venue where we sometimes call it a listening room.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call it a club, which is fine. It's not a bar. We don't have liquor for sale. We don't have food for sale. In fact, we have a BYOB policy, and people come in with anything they want to drink and whatever they might want to eat or snack on, they bring it with them because we don't sell it. What we do is we put all of our chairs and various things. We have couches and upholstered chairs, plus we also have regular, normal standard chairs and mm-hmm. folding chairs and stools, different kinds of things you can sit on as some tables. But mostly it's everything is pointed at the front. So everyone knows when you walk in the room, it's like a movie theater. You sit in wherever you're sitting and you face front and you're looking at the stage. It's like it's not a place to come and have a big, long conversation with all of your friends and sit around a table and talk while you're eating. It's not like that. It's a room to listen and hear the music and pay attention. And so we have wonderful audiences because when they come into the room, they even if they didn't think about it ahead of time, the furniture tells them what to do.
Mm.
And they are, just like a movie theater, the furniture tells you what to do. And you're a music audience. So it's small. We have our capacity is a little bit under 100. So there's not a whole lot of people at one time. I look at that as a virtue. I like, both as a musician and as a listener, I enjoy smaller spaces where you can really get up close to the music. I think that's the best way.
And you're having your anniversary, and you're going to have a lot of musicians that you can get up close to. So talk about the day of the anniversary.
That is true. Well, one thing that I did not do is I did not put everything on one day.
Mm-hmm.
I might have, and if I had to do all over again, I think I might have decided to say, hey, let's make everything one day, and we'll just go from morning to night, and then it would be very much about that day. This isn't that. I looked at it differently, and because I had quite a few different musicians and bands that I wanted to include, I spread it out over a two-week period. So although this week is the beginning of our celebration, it actually goes through the weekend and into next week. We have different musicians, different bands that are all part of this umbrella, the series, you might call it. In fact, mm-hmm. it is a series,
mm-hmm.
and it's a celebratory series. It is not a one-day particular event where everybody is going to come at the same moment.
Well, let's talk to Lali. So, Lali, tell us a little bit about the group that you are with and when you're going to be performing and how you all got together.
Yes. Well, thank you, Marilyn, for having us today. I am the band leader of a Latin band, 8-piece Latin band called Bululu.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we perform styles of music that are close to salsa, cumbia, calypso, anything centered around Caribbean countries like Venezuela, Colombia, Puerto Rico, Cuba. So it's definitely on the fun side.
Go
and
on.
We have performed at the Back Room. This is our third year in a row,
nice.
Performing at Sam's Space. We love it. I mean, it's a place really calibrated for good music. It creates a unique and close experience for all attendees, and we always look forward to making each Back Room experience something special. So looking forward to being there next Friday.
Well, tell me
April 17th.
Tell me a little bit more about Bululu. How did you guys get together, and what does Bululu mean?
Yeah. Well, Bululu is a Venezuelan word, and it's used to describe a lively commotion,
mm-hmm.
so a crowd, a buzz, or maybe that electric feeling when people come together and something exciting is happening. You know, that is a Bululu.
Mm-hmm.
So you could refer to it in a way as, you know, hey, that party last weekend was a full-on Bululu. You know, that's a perfect expression of it.
Oh, well, now I have a new word.
Yeah.
I love it.
And just to back up a little, the name, we are a group of 8 professional musicians, and we come from all sorts of different, you know, countries in Latin America. And we've been Bay Area residents for a long time,
mm-hmm.
most of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we bring in a lot of different, you know, influences, expertise, ways of approaching Latin music, and that is sort of a special elixir for this particular music project.
Excellent, excellent. Now, Sam, tell us, so,
Yeah, I wanted to butt in for a second about Bululu. And by the way, Lali, hello. Nice to be here with you. Lolly's that group, Bululu, is, first of all, it's a wonderful band, but it's also, depending on the song, can be a high-energy band. You know, Latin music is often high-energy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I said before about we're a listening room and people sit and they point front and they know what to do, that might have made it sound like they're just sitting in one spot with their hands folded and, it's not quite like that. They're sitting in there at the music, but if it's a high-energy situation, they respond to that in the way that you would. Sometimes people are dancing in the aisles, you know? When Lulu
right.
was here, at different moments, you can see a response from the audience that is very active, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's still very focused on the music. They are being an audience the whole time. They're not doing something else.
Okay.
But different kinds of music elicit different kinds of reactions naturally. And Bululu has its own range of reactions. And they're a lovely group, so I'm glad to have them.
And what night is Bululu performing?
They are there this week on it's
Friday.
Lolly,
Sam,
what is
right?
It's Friday, right?
Yeah, Friday the 17th.
Friday this week. Yeah, I have to think about it because I am having these from different bands on different nights.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all at the same time. But Lulu is Friday this week.
Okay, so like over how many weeks is this 10-year anniversary celebration going to take place?
Well, we're doing it over 2 weeks, so
okay.
It starts this Thursday,
mm-hmm.
And we're having Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday this week, and Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday next week.
Okay, and what time do the musicians start, or what time do the doors open?
The doors are almost all of them are starting at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
Except on Saturday and Sunday, it's if you look they look it up, you'll see it's the 7 o'clock times in many cases on Sunday, and plus on the Saturday we're having a matinee. There is. Sundays are also matinees, so the Sunday times are different. I mean, but the evening times are always at 8 o'clock.
Okay, and where is the back room?
The back room is in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. It's in the downtown area of Berkeley. It's right across the street from the area that people know to be the entertainment district. So we are We are the entertainment district too, but across the street from it.
So you're
it's University Avenue is the main east west drag of
mm-hmm.
Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
and we are right off of University Avenue, just a couple blocks from the campus.
So you're at 1984 Bonita Avenue in Berkeley.
Yeah, Bonita Avenue is a little street that runs into University.
Okay,
and we're at the corner of Bonita and University.
Okay. Can you tell me, can you just name a few of the other bands that will be participating in this celebration?
Well, sure, I can. I could name all of the bands.
Oh, okay.
If you like.
I would.
This Thursday, we have they're actually calling themselves the Anniversary Quartet because they put themselves together just for this event,
mm-hmm.
but Scott, the drummer, is a wonderful musician who puts together different bands for us all the time. And Scott Amendola has put together a great band for this Thursday. Lulu is Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Howl Devine, which is a great blues trio that's played here for years, will be here on Saturday. And on Sunday, we have a bluegrass day. There's a band called Crying Uncle, the Crying Uncle Bluegrass Band,
mm-hmm.
which are, that's its own story. They're also having their 10th anniversary. They're a bunch of college-age guys who started when they were kids, literally when they were kids, and they played for the first time at the back room when the lead mandolinist was 11 years old.
I love stuff
and,
like that.
And they were here 10 years ago doing
Aww.
That. And now they're here 10 years later, and the kids are grown up. But they are a very well-known bluegrass band, well-regarded,
mm-hmm.
and actually nationally and internationally known in some ways.
Wow.
So, and also Keith Little is going to be here on Sunday, who is a bluegrass luminary. And he was a producer of Crying Uncle's last album, and so they know each other, and he's going to be here. And I am going to be here on Sunday, too, doing one of my own as an opener.
Mm-hmm.
Because, among other things, I mean, I have my own music, and I am a piano player, and mm-hmm. I have my own band. But one of the things I do is bluegrass piano, which nobody else does. And I'm going to be doing that on the 19th. And that's just this week. If I continued for another minute, I could tell you about next week's, but I'm not sure we should say everything because I should, more important, say online, everything is there. If you go to our website, backroommusic.com.
Backroommusic.com.
Backroommusic.com. And if you go there, you'll see everything we're doing, the whole schedule, the whole calendar of events, and lots more. And that's probably the best way to tell people what's happening.
Great. And then, Lali, can you tell us, after you do your Friday gig, how would we find out about what other gigs you guys are doing?
Yeah, thanks, Marilyn. So you could find more info on the band and all the gigs we have coming up at bululusf.com. So that is B-U-L-U-L-U-S-F. As in sanfrancisco.com. Mm-hmm. And we're at the same handle for all of our properties. So at BululuSF, feel free to, you know, follow us, stay in touch that way. And we have, yeah, lots of presentations coming up. But for the time being, we're getting ready here to raise a toast to the Backroom's 10th anniversary series. And we're really looking forward to being there next Friday, April 17th, to celebrate with Sam and his team.
Excellent.
In Berkeley.
Excellent. Well, Sam and Lali, I want to thank you both for being on the show today.
Well, thank you.
Marilyn.
Thank you for having me and having us. Glad to be here. Is there a few seconds left for me to say one more thing about how we came to be? Because I just realized I should have mentioned it. For those folks of a certain age who remember decades ago when the Freight and Salvage was young. The Freight and Salvage in Berkeley now is a 500-seat theater. But the Freight and Salvage started out years ago as an 84-seat house. The same size of, well, we're 94 seats, mm-hmm. but they were the same basic size as we are. They were little, and they were a great place to hear music that was not the mainstream. And we kind of tried to fill that niche that they left when they went to a larger space.
Excellent. Well, with that, I want to thank you both again so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn.
All right. People of Earth, this is your opportunity to go check out the shows. And if you want a little flavor of Bululu, I'm about to play a little something for you. This is called Cumbia del Laundromat. So stay tuned.
Que lo que, mi gente del Tiny. We are Bululu from the Bay Area. We're performing a song called Cumbia del Laundromat.
Ay, mire, Doña Rosario, tengo un misterio así now. Mundo y ahora por dejarle sola se me fue. Saltó por el hoyo de la secadora, me dicen. Sería el chupa media o el güero cantando en inglés. No tuve cautela y por irme de farra la dejé. Bailando bien pegaditos en la plaza Hernán Cortés. We'll be right back.
Okay, I'm officially obsessed with them. That's Bululu and Cumbia del Laundromat. That was a live performance. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, there's a People's Circus Theater, and they're putting on a show, and we're so lucky to have them. So I'd like to welcome Felicity Hesed. Welcome.
Hi, Marilyn. Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Thank you for being on the show today. I saw one of your people and they told me about the show that's coming up. But rather than having me mangle all of the description of it, I'm just going to let you tell people what the name of the show is and what it's about.
The show is called The Unfinished Work of Camille Claudel.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a circus theater piece that fuses storytelling and circus arts, so think aerial and acrobatics, to tell the story of the artist Camille Claudel. She was a sculptor during the Impressionist period in France,
mm-hmm.
and had a pretty remarkable and tragic life. So we're using circus to tell her story.
And when you say she was, she had a tragic life, why do you say that?
Well, unfortunately, she was institutionalized in a mental institution for about the second half of her life.
Oh, wow. And so when you mention this Claudel artist, who was she affiliated with?
So Camille Claudel, she began making art in the 1800s in Paris, France.
Mm-hmm.
And her teacher was the very famous Auguste Rodin.
Mm.
So people probably know of the Thinker statue. That's mm-hmm. one of his most famous. And he was not only her teacher, but he became her lover.
Mm-hmm.
And they had quite a tumultuous love affair, which kind of turned a little bit sour. But so our show, you know, it's got it all. It's got the love and the jealousy and all this intrigue when it comes to the art world for, you know, nerds like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I think of clowning, I think of joviality. And when you talk about tragedy, how do you make those two work together?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this show, I would say it has quite a lot of comedy in it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to come see the show and just cry your way through it.
Okay.
We have a lot of very funny parts. And you know, clowns usually do touch on, they like walk that tight wire between tragedy and comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that we really do that in this show. So there are moments where we take the absurdity of the world and make it funny,
mm-hmm.
and then moments where it tips over into real tragedy. So it will be a full emotional experience if you come see it.
All right.
And we do a lot of amazing circus skills as well. So that's like the big acrobatics, the high-flying trapeze and silks, stuff like that.
So tell me a little bit about People's Circus Theater, because this is my first time hearing about it.
Oh, yay. Well, I'm so glad you are hearing about it.
Mm-hmm.
We are a relatively young company. In San Francisco, based in San Francisco, we've been around for a little less than 3 years.
Mm, okay.
But many of us had already been working together for a long time, excuse me,
mm-hmm.
in San Francisco. And so this company really was born out of the work we were already doing. And it was a really unique style of fusing storytelling and high-level circus skills.
Okay. So what made people come together for this?
Sorry, can you repeat that question?
What made people come together for this particular circus?
Ah, yes. Many of us were working together at Circus Center.
Mm-hmm.
And for listeners, if you haven't heard of Circus Center, it's an incredible circus school located right near Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, and anyone can take classes there and learn circus. So many of us knew each other through the Circus Center community,
mm-hmm.
and we had already made some productions together. One of our more well-known productions was a circus version of The Secret Garden.
Ooh.
And it was just kind of time for us to start our own company. So that's what we did. People may have heard of our popular holiday show, Reindeer Games, that we've done now 3 years in a row.
Okay.
And we also had a really popular piece, The Nightingale, last summer.
Go on. Are you still there?
And now here we are. So this is a fully new production,
mm-hmm.
and we started working on it last fall. We did a little work in progress, and then we've been working on it all winter and spring, and we're excited to preview it this week, actually, at Club Fugazi.
Oh, nice. So who are some of the clowns that I... Because I believe I saw some very young clowns at the Day of Ideas, which was also the Night of Ideas, at the library.
Oh, excellent. You probably met DeMarcello.
I did.
Yes, he's incredible. We're so happy to be working with him. Mm-hmm. And Cello is, he does identify as a clown 100%. A lot of our performers, to be honest, I think would identify more as circus artists rather than clowns.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got all types. So let's see. Repeat your question.
what's the age range of the people in your company?
Yes. Great. Most of our performers are professional adults, and this is what they do for their careers.
Mm-hmm.
So people like DeMarcello, and they range from about 21 years old to, I think our oldest current performer is in their late 30s.
Okay.
Maybe early 40s.
Okay.
So a pretty good range of adults. This particular production is just adults.
Okay.
Some of our other productions, we do incorporate youth artists, but not for this one because the content is a bit more mature.
Understood. But I do see that you have a youth all-star show.
We do, yeah. We're so excited about this. Our Youth All-Star Show is bringing together some incredible young artists from around the Bay Area. The Bay Area is rich with circus schools, Circus Center, Kinetic Arts Center, Prescott Theater, Acro Sports. These are all incredible training grounds for young people. And we're bringing together some of the best from these schools to put together a show this summer.
Nice. And how do people get to go to that one?
Yeah. So all of the information about all of our shows is on our website. So we encourage people to check it out. It's peoplescircustheater.org. And our tickets for the Youth All-Star Show are not up yet, but mm-hmm. they will be.
Well, then
and we also are on Instagram, and that's a great place not just to find out about what we have coming up, but also to get to see clips of our work and, moments in training and in rehearsal, which is always really fun to watch.
Okay. Well, then let's pivot back to the current show. When does it open? Where can people see it?
Yes. So the unfinished work of Camille Claudel, we are doing a sneak preview this Thursday, April 16th. At Club Fugazi,
mm-hmm.
well known for Dear San Francisco, the incredible circus show. And that's part of a big week-long circus festival that's happening at Club Fugazi. So that will be so fun for everyone. And then we'll be doing our official world premiere of our show at Dance Mission on May 1st and 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the San Francisco International Arts Festival, which is another amazing festival that's got music and theater and dance. And then we'll be finishing up this little tour with a limited run at ODC in June.
Excellent. Now, if people want to find out more about the circus or maybe even join the circus, how would they go about doing that?
Yes. Well, first, I will say circus is for all ages, all bodies. There's something that's in circus for everyone if it interests you.
Mm-hmm.
So we are in residence at Circus Center. We're proud to call Circus Center our home. We love Circus Center, and we highly recommend it. It's an incredible training space. You can be an absolute beginner and try flying trapeze or try a tumbling class or go to their juggling club. There's so many things you can try.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in the East Bay, there are also great schools out there like Kinetic Arts Center. And just down the street from us in San Francisco is Acro Sports, which is another wonderful school.
Okay. But if people want to join you or if people want to get tickets, how would they go about doing it?
Yes. If you want to look into tickets, please check out our website, peoplescircustheater.org. And it is theater, R-E.
Mm-hmm.
And all the information will be on our website. For people who are emerging professionals, aspiring professionals, or already professionals, we are always looking for new talent, and we have opportunities for people to come and train with us a little bit and learn how we do things and learn some partner acrobatics. So that will also that information is also on our website.
Excellent. So one more time for our listening audience, when and where for the unfinished work of Camille Claudel.
So the unfinished work of Camille Claudel, we have three different performances coming up. April 16th at Club Fugazi, May 1st and 2nd at Dance Mission, and June 4th through 6th at ODC.
Excellent. Well, Felicity Hedstead, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Marilyn. It was a pleasure.
All right. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. You know, I love things that sparkle. I love things that are fun and frolicky. The People Circus sounds like it's going to be a blast. Everything sounded so good. I want to see it all. So if you are not getting your mind touched, you're making a conscious decision to do so because San Francisco is just loaded with fun stuff to do. Mr. Ford is here who's going to be pleasuring your ear hole. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave you with a little bit of Les Mystères des Voix Bulgares. It's one of my favorites from the Cathedral Concert. This is called Come Into Leaf, Thou Forest. So until next week, my friends, ta-ta, and toodly-doo.